The Athletic.
And that's goal! Brilliant! Brave and brilliant!
MM stands for Mick McCarthy, not Merlin Magician.
Evans will hit it! Oh! That is special! It's magic at Molineux!
Dreaming is for free.
Hello and welcome to the Molineux View podcast with me, Jackie Oatley, and the Sheriff of Stafford, who happens to write about Wolves for The Athletic, Tim Spears. All right, Bab?
All right, Bab, how am you?
I'm all right, Bab. Now, what happens when you have a Johnny but no Willie? A clean sheet, of course. A third in five.
What is this carry-on podcast?
Is that rude? A bit rude. Hey-ho, it's true. A back five, no goals conceded, none scored either. So what did Nuno learn? And how are they going to stop James Ward-Prowse scoring his fancy free kicks in the next two games against Southampton? We have a special guest on the pod this week, a senior voice from inside the club. It's Matt Wild, General Manager of Football Operations, who's earned himself promotion since he was last on the Molineux View. And yes, we're taking all the credit. Matt will be telling us how the club is being run and what the challenges are during this income and fan-starved pandemic. Now, to read Tim's words on the Wolves, you must be a subscriber, so hop on board the Athletic Fun Bus for just £3.99 a month for the first 6 months. That's just £1 a week, and you can listen on the Athletic app without any adverts, although you'd miss some cracking ad reads, hey Tim? Especially the ones you did last week, which hopefully they'll use again this week. Have you bought yourself a Manscaped lawnmower yet?
I've had a great trim. I'll tell you all about it later.
You've had a bit of feedback on your ads, haven't you?
I can't believe you've already descended into debauchery and innuendo 10 seconds in. I used to think of you as a very kind of professional, distinguished broadcaster, but you've slowly debunked that myth every single week since we joined forces.
Slowly? I thought it happened quite quickly, but no, it might have been slower than you thought. Anyway, to the match on Sunday, Wolves with another clean sheet. And after that horrific experience of the Albion game a few weeks ago, in which it felt as though Wolves fans had kind of jumped out of an aeroplane and were free-falling, now it feels as though the parachute has been opened and we're able to breathe a sigh of relief again. Johnny's back. And it feels as though there are signs that the old Wolves are back. Is that fair?
The old Wolves, yeah, it did feel like the old Wolves. I mean, I know it finished 0-0, but I mean, it always does against Leicester, right? It's four out of the last six have been 0-0. It's either 0-0 or a 4-3.
It's that or 4-3, Bab. It's that or 4-3.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought in terms of an all-round game, from defence to attack, it was the best performance definitely of the calendar year and one of the best of the season. It was a very even game. The two teams look similar in quality, and since Leicester are still an outside bet for the title, that's a big compliment to Wolves, I think, you know, rather than Leicester having a bad day, because I didn't think Leicester played too badly. You know, Wolves have been horrendous for 2 or 3 months, so to look like they're on the same level footing as Leicester, I thought that was really, really positive. And it wasn't the most fascinating game for the neutral. I've seen a lot of comments on my timeline saying how boring it was, but I thought it was a pretty decent game. And there was lots of good build at play from both teams. I thought Wolves did well against the fluid movement of Maddison and Barnes, you know, two absolutely fantastic players. And on the flip side, Leicester kind of kept Willian Jose in check, and Justin did pretty well against Traore for the most part. And they tried to keep Neto in check with two players on him, but he just beat them both every time. He was phenomenal. When you've got Liam Gallagher tweeting he wants Man City to sign him, then you know he's getting national attention now. So I was really pleased, and yeah, very even game. I think 13 shots apiece, but only 4 on target in total, 1 for Wolves and 3 for Leicester, which kind of tells the story of two decent teams, like I said, decent build-up play, but no killer finish, stunted by two very good defences, of which Wolves' was outstanding.
And how much of a difference do you think Johnny made? Because we weren't expecting him to start, were we, by any stretch?
I had an inkling, I have to say, because he'd been in training for a while. Nuno was talking positively about him, and Wolves were tweeting all sorts on Thursday, Friday about, oh, the pack is strong and everything's great and all this, even though
little clips of him training and looking
good. Yeah, absolutely. So it just felt so familiar. It felt so familiar. I'm so impressed with how he slotted back in. You know, I think you speak to any former player who's had an ACL injury. A, for it to come back after 6 months and one day, and B, to slot in and play so well. We've seen six players play in that position this season, either left back or left wing back. They are, and I'm going to forget one here, but they are Fernando Marcel, Ruben Vinagre, Ryan Aitnori, Nelson Semedo, Romain Saïs, and Max Kilman, and none of them have played as well defensively as Johnny Castro-Otto did on his return after 6 months out with no competitive time at all with an ACL. That's a phenomenal kind of tribute to him and his professionalism. It felt so familiar. It felt comforting. It felt warm. It's like when you drive home to visit your family home, you know, and go and see your folks. You're driving through Womburn, through the village green. It's just, oh, it's so familiar. You know, it's like you when you go back to Codsall.
Oh, I want to go back to Codsall. Oh, don't. You're making me all homesick.
They've got the bunting and the red carpet out. The Queen's coming home. You know, it's just that, oh, it's lovely. It's, you know, feeling of familiarity. And that's how it felt with Johnny.
You're literally making me really homesick for my old mum now.
I'm sorry.
I want to go give her a big cuddle.
No, it looked like he'd never been away.
And also, apart from just the assuredness that he offered at left wing back, I also felt that he offered a lot to Neto. And we know what he's been doing pretty much. You know, he's a 20-year-old kid in his first full season as a starter every week. The onus has been on him in an attacking sense, and of course he works back as well. But having Johnny behind him, it just made you feel that, A, he's got a bit more security in terms of the defensive work behind him, a bit more freedom for him to go and express himself. But also he's got somebody who's going to give him the ball, the 1-2s. That was really promising as well.
Well, we saw Johnny, you know, we talk a lot about Jimenez and Jota's partnership over the previous two seasons, but Jotty, that's what I'm going to call them. It's like Brad and Angelina. Jotty, as I call them as a pair, Johnny and Jota, were brilliant together. They had a great understanding. Lots of 1-2s, lots of gives and goes, lots of getting Jota upfield with Johnny's help. And yeah, looking forward to see how their partnership develops. Slightly different characteristic in that, of course, Neto's left-footed, whereas Johnny and Jota, both right-footed, but still managed to strike up, like I said, what was a very effective partnership. They were great on the counter-attack together. So you're absolutely right. Got to pay tribute to the whole defence, really. I thought Kilman made such a good recovery from that nightmare against Arsenal. I mean, he was embarrassed that night. You know, he really was. So to recover from that, I thought Dendonka was really good. Johnny and Dendonka, neither of them have played in the Wolves' defence this season. And they both slot in like that. And I wrote about them last season, actually, how they're both kind of 7 out of 10 every week. You know what you're going to get, and every team needs them. And they've missed Johnny so much. They probably missed Johnny more than Jimenez this season, really. When you look at the difference he made yesterday, it's been such a weakness for Wolves at left back. So, yeah, the defence was great. Neves in front of them was really good as well. And, yeah, we should point out to anyone who didn't see on social media that that Johnny coming off at half-time was very much pre-planned. Nuno said after the game it was always the plan for him to play 45 minutes. He said if we play him for more than 45 minutes, we start to get in a risky area where we can't kind of control what will happen at that point. So yeah, and he was I saw him doing a warm down after a full time on the pitch, and he looked fine, he looked comfortable. So hopefully he'll build his game time up now. I don't know if we'll see him at Southampton in the Cup on Thursday. Maybe that's one we'll sit him out. But the next time we see him, I suppose we'll see him play 60, 70 minutes as he gradually builds up his fitness. But in terms of performance, I mean, Ayoze Perez, he didn't have a shot. He didn't touch the ball in the penalty area. He did absolutely nothing of note. I know he's not their best player, but still, he just kept him completely quiet like it was absolutely nothing. So fantastic to have him back.
Yeah, you were on fire with your article that I read this morning. People should have a little read about that, about Wolves' left back situation. Yeah, you had thawed out, and so had your comedy genes thawed out as well. People should have a little read of that. That was the positives about the defence. I don't want to dig this guy out every week, but Semedo?
He was just Semedo, really. I wasn't particularly...
He does lose the ball on occasions that he really shouldn't. I mean, I sent you a little clip where there was a good ball into him, I think from Cody. And I don't want to keep harping about, well, if Doherty had been there. But if Doherty had been there, he would have controlled it and created something out of that. Instead, he completely miscontrolled it. It ended up being a chance for Leicester. And he did that a few times. And he does have to tighten up. Don't want to bang on about it, but... You just want to see him improving every week, really. Injury gods, Tim, they're not smiling kindly on Wolves, are they?
I would just say quickly about Semedo, improving every... it's hard to see improvement every single week, but I think you can see an improvement from when he first joined defensively, right? And probably a little bit more going forward as well. He's not as bad as he was in those first few weeks, in my opinion. And yes, he set quite a low standard. I think what you want from Semedo is for the positives to outweigh the negatives. I think he's always going to be a bit dopey. I think he was like this at Barcelona. You know, we know he's got a mistake in him. But if he's offering so much going forward that it maybe outweighs those negatives, or with his pace or positional play, then you could say, okay, fair enough. But at the moment, he's not quite adding enough to the team to justify that fee, really. But he has got better for me overall in the past kind of 2 months or so.
You're putting it politely there, when somebody who costs 35 to 37 potentially, ultimately £1 million, and is mature, he's not a kid, when you're saying, well, as long as his positives outweigh the negatives, that is being really kind. But anyway, injuries, Bolly, hamstring, out for the next few weeks, Pedence, out again. Are these aggravations of the same injuries they had, especially bearing in mind that Bolly's a hamstring, or are they completely fresh injuries? Were they brought back too soon, perhaps?
I'm not sure if it's the same leg. As you say, Bolly's done his hamstring again, only just kind of back from that. Pedence, I believe, is a separate injury. But you do wonder if all these things are linked, seeing as, you know, these players aren't injury prone anyway. And it's an issue, and this won't be the last injury they have this season, judging on the record. You know, it's a better situation than it was a few weeks ago, for sure. Marcel is very close to being back, I gather. Johnny's back. Saïss was back on the bench at the weekend. So if Marcel does come back in the next kind of couple of games or so, they're down to three players out, I think they were at seven a few weeks ago. So it is easing. But like I said, the way they're going, they're going to get more injuries as the season goes on. It's the same for every team. And the teams that are dealing best with that this season, and best with injuries, and best with no pre-season and everything that kind of came with that, the teams that deal best with that are going to do better as the season goes on. And Wolves have suffered from not having a big enough squad. Pretty simple, really. So they've just got to hope they can get through this season with as few more injuries as possible in the next 3 months. And then after the Euros, if that's because ahead, then some of them can have a proper final belated break.
A lot of positives in terms of clean sheets of late, especially against the likes of Chelsea away and now Leicester home. Back five worked against Leicester, you could say, especially bearing in mind they did create chances. No, they only had the one on target and should have scored from it. We'll come on to that in a second. But what do you think Nuno's now thinking in terms of his dilemma that he openly admitted he had with the safety of the back five versus the attacking options of the back four?
It doesn't go away. He loves answers, solutions. There aren't any. It's the same problems every single game. You play 3-4-3, the defence looks good, but you're not scoring. You look at the last four games, they played 3-4-3 against Chelsea, 0-0, against Palace, 0-1, against Leicester, 0-0. There's one goal in three games there, and that was for the opposition. And then they play four at the back against Arsenal. They should have been 4-0 down after half an hour, and they managed to score two themselves, albeit that against 10 men. But they look better in attack against Arsenal. You've got to say, they did, either side of half-time, they look pretty good going forward. So it's the same conundrum, really, in terms of end product, because they were better. It was a better, much better all-round performance against Leicester. But still, in terms of end product, goals scored and conceded, it's the same old problem. But I think he'll stick with three at the back for now, because it's got him a foot in, and the defensive record has gone from conceding 8-3 to 2-4. So that's a marked improvement. Like I said, they're also scoring fewer, but we know Nuno is a manager all about organisation and clean sheets first and foremost. So I think this is the path that they'll continue down for now, and just try and improve how they get bodies upfield. Willian Jose's got a big part to play in that. I thought he had an ineffective game against Leicester, which you can excuse him. He's still very new in the country, and it's a lot of games in a short space of time. He's done very well so far. But that's the next step in their improvement now, is keeping this defensive rigidity while adding more goals. And we know how well Neto and Traore are playing. The amount of balls that go across the face of goal that are wasted, it happens at least once a game. A really good ball across the six-yard box, usually from Neto, sometimes from Traore, that they don't score. So that's the kind of, you know, that's, and I know we're asking a lot of Jose. We're asking him to be a hold-up player with his back to goal and link play and score goals. And you can say that's too much to ask for him, but he does all of the good team stuff. But when it comes in the box, he's just not reacting quick enough. So that's what they've got to get out of him. And like I said, it's very early days for him and getting on his teammates' wavelengths, but it's happening every single game. So that's something they've got to learn on, for him to react to those balls coming across the box and get a few tap-ins, because they are there.
Feels a bit like when Traore and Neto are trying to find him. It's like an old analogue radio when you're trying to tune in BBC WM and you're picking up signal and a bit of Radio 4, and all you want to hear is WM goal horn. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's a goal. It's going to work well. Ian Winter. Harking back to for the olden days. But yeah, I mean, you get the impression that will come, but it has been frustrating. And poor Traore, look at his stats, aren't great in terms of assists, and we know he hasn't scored for a year and a couple of months.
No goals, no assists. Yeah, it doesn't get any worse than that. Blimey.
It's not good, but in terms of the assists, at least, I mean, it must be frustrating because he has created a lot of big chances, hasn't he? It's just that they haven't gone in. So you would think at least the good signs from the Leicester game, it felt a bit like the old positive Wolves that they were creating. It was frustrating that it was only really late on in the game that they actually tested Schmeichel. I mean, Neves had a great chance early on, didn't he? Moutinho, after his wonder goal the other day, put one over the bar. Both of them should have hit the target, you have to say that. And then it comes to poor old Fabio Silva, who, you know, you then look at and scrutinise, because actually Wolves could have turned 1 point into three so easily. And he was in the right place, good movement, all the things we know he's good at. And it was a fabulous save by Schmeichel. That is what he does. But every ex-striker who's looked at that, they've all used the word dink. He should have dinked it, because there was a huge amount of space the other side of Schmeichel, and he went for the very narrow angle where he came out and got his boot out to it.
Oh, Fabio. I mean, it's just the same every time with him. Missing sitters. It's how you judge him depends on your disposition. Are you glass half full? Are you saying it's great, he's getting in the positions, great movement, instinctive, good awareness? Or are you saying, oh my God, he can't hit the proverbial cow's backside with the old banjo? So, yeah, again, I feel sorry for him. I know a lot of people don't, but I do. But yeah, he's got to score. He's got to score. It's a great save, but he shouldn't be allowing him to make that save. If Willian Jose is wrapping his right foot around that, then it's a goal, I think. So, real shame. Real shame. If Jimenez plays, Wolves win for me. And if Vardy starts, Leicester win. It's probably where the two teams kind of fell down at the end of the day.
Oh, that chance at the end there for Jamie Vardy in stoppage time from a brilliant Albrighton cross. It was initially Semedo that was up against Vardy. He didn't look at Vardy and his movement and see where he was. And then Vardy, great movement from him. And he got in front of Dendonka, who also didn't see where Vardy was. And Vardy should have hit the target. They could have turned 1 point into three. Hence why I think Nuno's quite happy with his clean sheet and point at the end of it.
Absolutely, there is that as well. I like the team, though. I like that team. Hopefully that team can stay together for a few matches now. Wolves have had no consistency in selection all season, and that's not going to breed consistency in results or performances. You know, as Nuno said on Friday, they're still trying to find their levels. I asked him, you've missed Johnny and Doherty so much this season. Is that a key part of why you haven't had consistency? Because the wing-backs are so important. And he said, it's not about trying to find consistency at the moment. It's about trying to find our levels from last season and get back to the levels that we're at. I thought we saw, you know, some decent positive signs against Leicester in that regard. But I really hope this 11 can stick together now, because Traore and Neto, they look great. If Jose can continue to get up to speed and add some goals, Dendonka and Johnny, if they can continue in the defence for me while Bolly's out for 4 weeks, Pedence's out for six. So we want some consistency now. There is a slight concern for me in midfield with Neves and Moutinho, if they're going to be the pair now for the next few weeks, because I don't think they're that effective as a pair together, and you do miss Dendonka's physical presence in midfield. So that's a slight concern. But on the whole, I like that team and I want to see them play together week after week now.
Yeah, absolutely. Something to build on. Nuno said it was a good game for us. There are many aspects to correct. I'm proud of the boys. In terms of the Fabio Silva chance, he said all credit to Schmeichel, but he must test him better in a more committed way. He's a talented boy, very young. He's learning, he's growing. And he said also on the defence, he said it's not perfect, but the priority was clear in our minds. We had to stabilise the team from behind. I'm very proud because we lost important players in our back line. Leander, what can I say about Leander? He's amazing how versatile, dedicated and committed he is. I'm very proud. From there on, when we're able to stabilise, we will improve for sure. And he also had some praise for Adama, who I thought had a fabulous game. I love watching the bloke when he's like this. I mean, he can be. He can do it in different sort of sections of each game, sometimes more than others. But he said, Adama's a unique player in the world. He's very, very special. He did well, foul after foul against him. He had a clear chance in the box. That's something we want to add to his game. He's committed to. So, yeah, he did get in that goal-scoring position. It was a brilliant, brilliant block by James Justin. He was fantastic throughout the match, wasn't he? But a lot of positive signs in that particular game. And you're saying you think he's going to stick with this five going forwards and a really similar lineup, maybe with Dendonka at the back for the next few weeks?
I think so, yeah. I don't really like Saïss coming in there on the right of the three. You know, he was back on the bench against Leicester, but I personally prefer your natural right footer on the right of Cody and Kilman on the left. Like I said, Kilman did very well as well. There's a nice balance to that team, and I think there's good potential there. Like I said, they took on a very good Leicester team and they did it pretty well, so good signs.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
We'll come on to preview Wolves League and Cup doubleheader with Southampton very shortly, as well as hear from your tweets and any other business. But first, we thought it would be interesting to hear some insight from a senior figure inside Wolverhampton Wanderers. How is the club actually operating during this latest lockdown? Who does what and how do they communicate? Matt Wild spoke to us in episode 11 of the Molyneux View last March. Now, nearly 11 months later, some of us are still confined to barracks. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Jackie. You okay?
Well, thank you. I hope you've been let out now. Are you actually working at the club rather than having to homeschool three kids like you were last time?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been quite fortunate. So, you know, I've been one of the lucky ones. I've been back at the training ground since last May. So I've been part of the testing programme, and you know, we've been very much sort of running the operation here, obviously under very different circumstances to what we'd normally operate under. But you know, feel very, you know, very fortunate that I'm able to carry on my job at work. Feeling very sorry for a lot of people who are working at home still. And hopefully we're not, with the vaccine in rollout now, hopefully we'll be getting back to some normality soon. But it must be very tough for people.
Yeah, it would be nice, wouldn't it? We're all trying to look forward. But I mean, when we last spoke to you, you were administration manager. Now you have a rather fancier title of general manager football operations. There's been a bit of a reshuffle, hasn't there? Is that a sort of promotion as such? Can we take the credit and just say yes and that'll be fine?
Well, yes, I think it's more, I think the role in itself, from when I joined in 2017 and the club's grown and evolved, so is my job. I think it's definitely moved away from administration, the traditional function of a secretary, you know, to looking at the support services, you know, of a Premier League football now. You know, you've got grounds, kit, laundry, the player care functions forever growing. The team now have security. You know, the canteen is such a big operation now. We're looking at more emphasis on logistics and organisation for match days for both home and away. So I think they've grown, and therefore the job's grown with it. I think there's a bigger emphasis, in particularly in my role now, on finance. You know, it's a tough period for businesses, and you know, Wolves is no exception. We've lost a lot of money over the last 12 months as a result of COVID, and I think it's important, therefore, that you know, we keep monitoring our spend, you know, ensure that we're staying in budget, and the professional cost centre, which I oversee, you know, is a very big part of that. You know, you've got operational costs, player salaries, transfer fees, you know, which, you know, run into the millions. So, you know, there's more of an increased focus, you know, in my role, you know, in monitoring like each department. And I think one of the biggest changes since, you know, Laurie left, and probably particularly Kevin, you know, in his role as sporting director, you know, there's more of a support function now to Jeff, you know, on the contractual side of it, you know, in terms of, you know, player acquisitions and player renegotiation of the contracts, you know, which, you know, Jeff sort of formed this committee with him, myself and Scott Sellers, who's now technical director, you know, and although Jeff's sort of the key decision maker, you know, I think it's great that Scott and I are able to, you know, feed into that, you know, with our thoughts. And I think that helps with the, you know, decision-making process. I think the way we've been functioning over the last 12 months since Kevin left, I think it's worked well. You know, we've done a lot of renegotiation of contracts. You know, we've successful with Max Kilman, Connor Cody obviously signed, Raul Jimenez, Pedro, Leander, you know, all signing new contracts and committing to the club, as well as a number of, you know, younger players. You know, and I'm sure there'll be more to come over the coming weeks and months. So it's a great job. You know, it's so varied. It crosses over, you know, nearly every department, you know, at this football club. And I think that's why I've stayed in it for so long. You know, I'll be 20 years this July.
You sound like you're enjoying it, which is great. I mean, you have a background in accountancy, which sounds like it's very helpful as well. But how stressful is it without the income that you're used to having?
Yeah, no, I think it's been on the finance side of it. You know, that's important. You know, and we work very closely. Myself and Jeff work closely with Henry, who's head of finance now, and it's important. And you have to keep looking at it and watching the numbers and make sure we don't overspend it. And not just in the short term. You know, we're looking at, you know, a long term model, 3 to 5 years ahead. You know, so when we're looking at contracts, we have to make sure that, you know, it's sustainable, you know, that the club's sustainable, that, you know, when we're looking ahead in 5 years' time, the cash flow's there, but, you know, it's so important. So it is stressful. And, you know, and then in the short term, you know, we're constantly facing new challenges with COVID. So, you know, it's highly pressured at the minute. But, you know, I think we're just very fortunate that Premier League's been able to continue, you know, and we got 19-20 finished, you know, with the numbers coming down, the infections coming down. We're hoping that we'll get 2021 finished on time. So, you know, we're very lucky.
Matt, how difficult is it to plan for kind of the year or 2 years ahead when you don't know what your income streams are going to be in terms of from fans being back in the stadium?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we've just factored in no worst case. I think when we were looking at budgets, you know, when I first spoke to you in March, we were looking at the budget for 2021. And then we wiped out, you know, we assumed there was going to be no revenue from supporters for this season. So I think that helps to sort of have a pessimistic approach, and anything that comes your way, you know, if we were able to get fans back, would be a bonus. Probably doesn't look like we will at the minute. So I think it's always, you know, important that you've got like a worst case scenario. I think 1920, we were fortunate in that we had the Europa League income. Obviously, we've not been fortunate with that for this season. But, you know, it's just adapting to the climate that we find ourselves in. So I think we've adjusted very well. You know, we're picking up now in the league. You know, we're still in the FA Cup. So I'm sure we'll be, you know, we'll finish in the top half of the league. So I think it would just be nice to get this season, you know, done and dusted. And hopefully we'll get back to some normality for 21-22.
Yeah, ideally with an FA Cup in the cabinet, that'd be quite handy, wouldn't it?
Oh, that'd be very nice, yes.
Especially after what happened the last time Wolves went to Wembley. We don't need to talk about
that. Yeah, I've still got images of the... Yeah, let's talk about the semi-final.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that. That's awful. It sounds like a really interesting role that you have. And how does it work, bearing in mind that you're at the training ground? I guess you see Nuno. Does he sort of bend your ear asking for the maximum that he's allowed in terms of the lockdown situation and what you're allowed to do? For example, he's mentioned in his press conference about the canteen being an important part of the social element of bringing the players together. Is that something you have to then talk to the Premier League about and say, look, what can we do?
Yeah, so we've sort of had like canteen gate, really. So, I think it's first of all saying that the communication and the consultation with the Premier League has been fantastic, I think, throughout this period. You know, we've had over probably 30 shareholder meetings, you know, talking about issues, you know, from curtailment to, you know, the league finishing late, looking at fixture calendars, you know, what does behind closed doors look like, you know, what happens when we get fans back, you know, and there's been regular captains meetings and managers meetings, you know, so Connor would sit on those, Nuno would sit on them. So right the way throughout this process, there's been numerous meetings for people to feed in. Matt Perry, our club doctor, sits on the medical working group. There's been like a match day advisory group where all these protocols get talked about. So I think Nuno's been fortunate in he's had that forum to express his views. Obviously, there's been times, particularly in this third lockdown, where in order for us to keep going, that, you know, the Premier League have had to tighten up on certain protocols. You know, we're back to twice weekly testing. You know, we there's more vigilance, especially at the training ground, around wearing of masks. And then obviously one of the issues was the decision to close the canteen. And it wasn't just Nuno, you know, we sat on various meetings and it was a common consensus across the Premier League that, you know, we needed to work to try and find a way to get the canteens back open. Because when you're playing twice a week, you know, part of the, you know, you need to recover, you need to refuel, you need to make sure they're eating, you know, correctly. So food is such an important part of that. So we worked really closely with the Premier League and with Steve Sutton, our head of operations, and Ryan Boone, who does all our risk assessment, so we could get to a position where the Premier League were comfortable that we could reopen it safely with, you know, people being socially distanced and having a maximum in our canteen and everyone having staggered eating time. So fortunately, we're back open and running that full time and the players are in. So, but the protocols are, you know, are there for a reason. We need to protect us all, you know, and we want to keep the competition going. So, you know, we've got Premier League compliance officers at every single training session, you know, to make sure that the rules are being followed. You know, for example, making sure that people wear masks around the building. You know, if players are out, for example, on the pitch and, you know, they're wearing bibs, you know, in small-sided games, making sure those bibs aren't recycled, make sure they're going in a new, you know, in a bin for laundry and then getting some new bids out, you know, if a new one's required. There's a lot of operational, you know, rules that are going on behind the scenes that people probably aren't aware of that we're having to work with. You know, we've got Perspex screens in our dressing room, you know, so that no one's, you know, on top of each other. So it's quite complex.
And Matt, just on transfers, you mentioned you sort of got an increased role in that, you know, over the past few years. I mean, for example, the William Jose deal, could you kind of explain what your sort of role would be in that deal?
It's a good example, William Jose, because I was looking at when we signed him and people were asking about his visa and, you know, why is it taking so long to get his visa open, you know, to come to England? But I don't think people appreciated, you know, we were hit with this third lockdown, but then Brexit came into force as well on the 1st of January. So with William, it's quite complicated because now we have to get every player that's coming from outside the United Kingdom needs a work permit. You know, he was in Spain, so we had to apply for a governing body endorsement with him for the FA. We couldn't medical him in the UK, so we had to get a medical done in Spain. You know, you then have to apply for a certificate of sponsorship to the Home Office. You then have to submit his visa application. You know, we would ordinarily get a visa in Paris because you can turn a visa around in 24 hours in Paris, but we couldn't get him into France because of COVID. So we had to get the visa done in Madrid, which takes slightly longer. You then have to apply to the FA to get a quarantine exemption. He had to get a negative PCR test before he flew to England. In order for him to be eligible for the Premier League, he then had to have a prenetics test, which is the testing company that the Premier League use, in order for him to be eligible to play in Premier League games. So we had to get him tested as soon as he landed at Farnborough Airport. We had to have a nurse there to test him. You know, so I think it's such a long list of, like, tick box, yeah, of getting someone in. So, you know, we were fortunate that we managed to get all that in, you know, in time for Chelsea. But yeah, it's so much more complicated. Not only with Brexit, I think that hit with COVID, it was complicated enough, but having Brexit hit at the same time, you know, and we've got a lot of EU nationals here. So I don't know if you've heard about the settlement status that, you know, everyone's got to sign up to by the 1st of June, I think it is, this year. You know, so we were busy sorting that out at the same time. The players, but just their families as well, coaching staff and their families. Yeah, so it's been a sort of all come at once, really.
Blimey, there's so much more to it. This is why it's good to hear from you, Matt, because we from the outside have no idea what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. I mean, is there anything else that you would think people, like fans, yeah, and people who just watch football on the telly, who are shouting things at the telly, have no idea what really goes on and the complex nature of the process of running a club?
Well, we sort of spoke about training. I think match day is another area, I think. People are a bit limited about what goes on. I mean, it's so restricted. You know, our match day, Premier League match day protocols, you know, there's like a red zone, an amber zone and a green zone. So in the red zone, you know, you're limited on the personnel you can have in there. So you can have 36, you know, red zone personnel. And if you bear in mind that 20 of those are players, you know, that only leaves 16 people for your coaching staff, for medical, for security analysis kit. You know, so it's very, very restrictive. You know, so when we go away now, you know, we have to, some people are sacrificed. You know, we only take one kit man, you know, and everyone else just has to, you know, help along. at hotels, we have to get all the hotel staff tested before we arrive, which means we have to get, you know, tests sent out to them so that they can conduct the lateral flow test, they can establish if anyone's positive. You know, we have to, a lot of hotels, for example, particularly in London, are shut, so we have to see if they'll open for us. You know, if there's other key workers at the hotel, can we have a floor to ourselves? Can we have a low floor so we have to use a lift? If that's not possible, can we have our own lift if there's other people staying there? You know, are the function rooms big enough for us to social distance? You know, there's so many like variants with it. And when I said about the Premier League being at every training session, obviously they've got compliance officers at every match as well. So me and Steve Sutton, Matt Perry, we always have to be vigilant that, you know, they don't want shirt swapping. You know, people have got to be wearing masks all the time. I mean, even when players are in the dressing room, like milling about, you know, they have to have a mask on. You know, they'll be looking at, you know, are they able to make sure that people are sat in the right places? And, you know, so it's very much, match balls are being cleaned when they go out. So there's so much that goes on sort of behind the scenes. And I think I drive players crazy. I'm like, Connor, I'm on positive messaging, wow. Connor saying, you know, we can't do this, we can't do that. And if I've seen a couple of players swapping shirts, I'll be like, I get the CCTV footage from our stadium, I'm sending him a picture. And they're like, oh my God, you're like the COVID police and stuff. But it's so important, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, we are sticking to the rules, because, you know, we're in a privileged position to keep playing.
And how useful is it having a captain such as Connor, who is such a good communicator, to be able to use as a conduit for all these nuggets of information and things that you need to pass on?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, like I said, we've got a big first team WhatsApp group, but then, you know, because we work so closely together, the training ground's not that big. You know, so I speak to Connor most days, and, you know, we can liaise over various issues, COVID related, and he's very good. He'll always communicate out to. He's got a separate group with his players that he'll put stuff in there. And if I'm saying, you know, Connor, we need to tone down the goal celebration, you know, because you're not supposed to be hugging. It's easier said than done, but he'll try and put the message across. And you probably won't notice this, but, you know, when we score against West Brom, you know, the players are sort of congratulating each other. And I can see Connor sort of going, well, tone it down a bit. I can sort of see him actually trying to do it on the pitch. So he's very good with them. He's a fantastic captain, you know, to work with. It makes the job so much easier.
And what about in terms of, you've got all these players, a lot of them new from Portugal, and now William Jose from Spain, and they're used to being able to go around each other's houses. They have this community that we've talked about before, and Tim's written a lovely piece about in Compton and Tettenhall. How difficult is that in terms of what they can and can't do, and explaining to them what they can and can't do, and but still maintaining that sense of unity that Nuno and the team needs and is essential for their well-being?
Well, I think we're obviously fortunate, but we're playing so often that, you know, there's not many days off, you know, so, you know, they're pretty much here, you know, full time anyway. So I think that's helped. I think, you know, we've spoke about before, you know, people have days off, you know, well, what can they do on their day off? A lot of these players, like you say, are on their own, you know, so I think in some respects it makes more sense for them to be here and be within the group and be amongst people. I think William's sort of been, he's had a similar experience, I think, with Real Sociedad. They're operating in a bubble, similar protocols. But I think even he, you know, as soon as he arrived, and I'm sending him like documents in Spanish about what you can do and what you can't do. And, you know, I think they've got a good support. You know, people are helping them with, you know, particularly William, making sure he's okay, that, you know, he's in a hotel at the minute, trying to find him accommodation, making sure he's got everything he needs. And they're a good group, you know, they speak to each other. I know they're speaking to each other, you know, virtually. So I think they're getting on really well with it.
That's good. And hopefully they're getting into the trash TV that you and Connor Cody like so much. I notice on your personal page on the website, no, that's what you're into when you're not doing your job.
That's it, isn't it? When we're not working, and I've never watched so many box sets, you know, I think that's...
Yeah, you just need Love Island to come back, and then that'll occupy you fully.
Well, that'll be it now. Yeah, it will.
Brilliant, Matt. Thanks so much for coming on and giving us that kind of insight as to how it works at the club in these crazy times, which we hope are not going to last for too much longer, certainly not beyond this season. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thanks a lot.
And if you want to know further details of who does what at Wolves, it is on their official website. You go to the club banner on the front page, click Wolves, About Us, and Management Team. And then that's where you get the details of what the likes of Matt actually do for their job. And in their spare time, in his case, it's a case of Love Island and all the fun stuff like that to really be able to switch off. But interesting stuff there, Tim, about what goes on behind the scenes that we couldn't possibly know about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, such a busy guy, as you said, and such an important role at the club. And what really struck me was the amount that to do with transfers is just crazy. I mean, you could see why Wolves weren't expecting Willian to make his debut at Chelsea, even though they'd basically signed him, what, 3-4 days earlier? I mean, there's so much to do, so much paperwork, so many things to get approval on. You know, talking about him going to bloody Paris before coming to, for the visa or whatever it was, before coming over here. It's just crazy. So yeah, and people on Twitter, as soon as they see those transfer links and they're like, announce Jose, announce Willian, yeah, maybe give it a few days next time, because there's so much to do.
Now, you may have noticed that there's a lot of talk about Phil Foden at the moment, who helped Manchester City beat Liverpool 4-1 at Anfield on Sunday night. So he scored a wonderful goal. It was a wonderful performance, but just 3 years and 3 months ago, he was starting in the final of the under-17s FIFA World Cup alongside a certain Morgan Gibbs-White. Now, in contrast, Morgan came on in the 88th minute at the weekend to, shall we say, mixed response from a lot of Wolves supporters who certainly haven't seen the best of him yet in a Wolves shirt. He started one game since his return on loan from Swansea. And Tim, did you know that he hasn't ever completed a full 90 minutes in the league for Wolves? He's now 21 years of age. So was it the right decision to recall him, first of all, from Swansea?
I think at the time, yes. It was after that Brighton game where Nuno didn't want to make any subs because he had a bench full of kids, and Gibbs-White was back to full fitness. Wolves had Pedence and Dendonka out at the time. They were short of options in midfield or in the hole. So it made sense to call back their player at that time, and Cotroni as well at that time, because they had no bench. They had no bench at all. They had seven players out injured. At that time, yes. At the end of January and looking towards the rest of the season, if Wolves are going to be playing 3-4-3 and Morgan Gibbs-White is going to be getting 5 minutes out of position at the end of every game, then he's back to square one in terms of his development. And at this stage of his career, he'd benefit more from being at Swansea, I think, if that's the way it's going to go for the rest of the season.
I mean, looking at the way they've developed since, Pep Guardiola is getting a lot of credit for the way he's brought Phil Foden in, for fits and starts here and there. And he's been talked a lot about in terms of England in the summer for the Euros. In terms of Morgan Gibbs-White, I mentioned he'd never completed a full 90 minutes in the league for Wolves. He has, of course, played in the Cups, and he has, of course, played in the Europa League. And he has scored for Wolves, just not in the league. But he hasn't scored from 36 Premier League appearances, 7 starts. Phil Foden has now played 10 full 90 minutes in the Premier League for Manchester City with 11 league goals from 58 Premier League appearances. Now, it's unfair perhaps to directly compare them, but you can see why I'm trying to do precisely that in terms of his development. I mean, how do you think he would feel right now about how he's been developed at Wolves?
Well, number one, the Foden comparison. I mean, Foden's a once-in-a-generational talent, potentially. I mean, you know, you've seen people talking about him being the most talented English young player since Wayne Rooney, which kind of shows you the level he's at. But what is interesting is the comparison with how many minutes they've played in the Premier League. And Gibbs-White's on 800, and Phil Foden's almost three times that, on 2,200. So he's got three times as many minutes in a very, very good team, and he's obviously learning very quickly. Gibbs-White, 7 Premier League starts in his career. Foden, 23. So the key for Gibbs-White is playing football, and he's not doing that at Wolves. He was doing that at Swansea at the start of the season, and I went to watch him, and I spoke to someone really kind of respected in the game, a senior football figure who watches a lot of Championship football, and he said Gibbs-White was probably the best player in the league for the opening month of the season. You know, that's how good he was.
Yeah, he started their first 4 Championship games before his injury,
which was the most consecutive starts he'd ever made in his career. And it was no coincidence that he was in his best position in the 10, starting every week and doing very well for a team that was in sort of top 6, maybe approaching top 2 of the Championship before he got his injury. So the key to any development is playing and being at the right club. And in years to come, we'll see how those under 17 World Cup winners, you know, their careers were charted. I mean, Rhian Brewster won the Golden Boot in that tournament, and he hasn't scored in 20 appearances for Sheffield United this season. So there's no kind of set path. Everyone goes down their different journey, but I think the best journey for Gibbs White this season was going out and playing football. A full season at Swansea in the 10, where he was dictating play, would have been perfect. Unfortunately, circumstances have meant that he's injured for 3 months and now back at Wolves. The biggest issue for him at Wolves, for me, is he doesn't fit into a 3-4-3, which is the system they play more often than not. He's never been played in central midfield, which is where I'd like to see him play, personally. He's often out wide as one of the wide forwards. I've never, correct me if I'm wrong, and anyone who's listening, I'm sure they will, I've never seen him play well in a wide position for Wolves. It's not his position. I remember Besiktas away, he got hauled off after 70 minutes. He barely touched the ball. It was just not his position. He's best between the lines in a central area, playing through balls, getting his head up, being positive. Little 1-2s, he's got great technique. The talent is there, and you speak to people at Wolves' academy over the past kind of 10 years, he's the best they've produced. But when you look at, and he's turned 21 now, you look at what Neto is doing at 20, you look at what Neves had done by that age, you know, if he's going to join Wolves on this top-level Premier League adventure, it's got to happen pretty quickly. You know, you look at their opponents on Sunday, Leicester, Madison's 24, Barnes is 23. If he's going to be at their level, it's got to come over the next 2 years, and that's got to come with playing regularly. So if they do switch between the two formations and he plays 4-2-3-1 with Pedence out now, he may get his chance in the hole a bit more. But either he's going to have to leave to further his career, or he's going to have to change positions if Nuno's going to continue with this formation. I'd like to see him in a flat four. I think he's got potential in that area to develop, but Nuno doesn't trust him in there at the moment, and he's going to play Moutinho, Neves and Dendonka ahead of him. You know, we know that, and that makes complete sense because they're proven in that area. So it's such a shame. You know, he started the season so well. That was going to be it for him. I really thought he was going to kick on. He might not have come back to Wolves, but, you know, he might have really, really launched his career at Swansea, and it's not happened, and now he's back to square one a bit. So it's an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, you can see it from all angles. You can see it from Nuno's. He has given him opportunities in terms of other cup competitions and dribs and drabs in the league. You can see it from his point of view. He'd probably like to start regularly in a certain position to be able to get that familiarity, and with maybe a couple of strikers ahead of him, as has been the way at Swansea. And but also from the fans' point of view, I can imagine some fans kind of shouting at their digital devices going, but when he has come on, he hasn't necessarily shown enough to warrant those starts. Would you agree with them on that?
Well, it's sort of chicken and egg, isn't it? You know, the kid needs regular starts. He needs 5-10 starts in a row to really show us, to start to show us what he can do. But equally, yeah, he does need to do more off the bench to earn his place in that team. Equally, he's not playing in his favoured position, so he either needs to go to another club where he can play in the 10, or he needs to remodel his game. So he's kind of stuck between all three at the moment. And, you know, they bought Vitinha in the season, who's not getting game time. And I saw a lot of fans complaining that Vitinha should have come on instead of Gibbs White for Neto at the weekend. I thought Nuno was really playing for 0-0 at that point, and take off Neto and replace him with Gibbs White, who he probably trusts more to defend from the front than Vitinha. I think that's fair enough, really. So yeah, we'll see. Southampton, you may get a chance against Southampton. We'll see how strong Nuno goes. I suspect he probably won't. But yeah, it looks like he's going to be stuck in a bit of a rut for the rest of the season as it stands. And it's a big summer ahead for his future as to where he goes and plays his football, because at the moment it's not going to be at Wolves.
Yeah, and interesting, they have the option on loan at Vitinha as well. If they turn that into a permanent move, then, you know, they're kind of vying with each other, aren't they, there? But also, I mean, I've just sprung to mind, remember what happened with Mark Davis? It just never quite happened for him at Wolves. He just didn't get the game time that he wanted, and he went on to Bolton and made a really good career. I know it's a different level, but it's still relative that Wolves never saw the best of him for whatever reason. And what you don't want is, you know, the talent is there. You just don't want him to go to another club and suddenly absolutely, I don't know, say Southampton for the sake of argument, and then absolutely smash it. And it becomes a top Premier League player. And then everyone goes, hang on a minute, why didn't he do it at Wolves? Why wasn't he given the opportunity? So it is a difficult one.
You're right, but sometimes a fresh start is what a player needs. Sometimes it's you put your hands up and say it's not going to work for me at this club due to maybe not getting on with the manager, or maybe just not fitting in with the system. You know, I bet Benfica fans are wondering, why the hell did we let Raul Jimenez go? I bet Lazio fans are saying, oh my God, Pedro Neto didn't start a game for us. Look how good he is. You know, we've let him go to Wolves for 16 million. So sometimes a fresh start is what you need. And at the moment, it's heading down that way for Gibbs White.
Okay.
Which would be a real shame because he's come through the academy since, 8 years old. And I know they really, really want it to work out for him. But at the moment, it's hard to see.
Yeah. And it would be quite a novelty to maybe see an English player score in the Premier League for Wolves, because it's been over 2 years now since an Englishman did that. Ryan Bennett in the 4-3 win over Leicester at Molineux in January 2019. It is extraordinary. It hasn't happened since. And Southampton, next. We get to see them twice in the next few days.
Aren't we lucky?
In league and cup. So next up on Thursday night on BT Sport, they will be playing in the FA Cup. And then on Sunday at 12 noon, which is very early, to be playing away at Southampton in the Premier League. That's on Amazon Prime, by the way. So when you're watching that, make sure you switch off all your notifications so you don't get goal news before you see it on the telly, which I find really frustrating when that happens. Switch it all off. But I mean, what do you think Wolves' priority will be? Do you think it'd be getting 3 points in the Premier League and, you know, shifting a place or two up? Or do you think it would be potentially a place in the FA Cup quarterfinals?
Yeah, I mean, Nick Turner tweeted us with that question, you know, with the injury list growing, thoughts on whether we should go for the cup or concentrate on the league. I don't think Nuno will prioritise either, personally. I think he'll play a strong team in the cup. I think Ruddy will be in goal, but otherwise it might be the same team, maybe. I think they're safe now. I think that win over Arsenal, combined with no signs of any of the bottom three, you know, putting together a run of form, I don't see them getting sucked into a relegation battle. I don't think they're in one at this moment in time either. I think they're okay for now. But that's not going to mean that Nuno's going to play strongest 11 in the cup and then rest a few for the league. I think he'll play strongest available team in both, if I was going to guess. But yeah, I mean, we said this before just after the third round, that this can save Wolves' season, really, and make it a really memorable one. And who knows, there might be fans at Wembley for the final in May, the way things are going. And, you know, what a fantastic kind of thing to play for. And with Man City and others involved in so many competitions, and it's going to be such a hectic end to the season, then if Wolves can put a run together in the FA Cup, then they've got a really decent chance. And we know what a good cup team they are. And I'm sure after bigging them up, they're going to lose on Thursday. But no, I do quite fancy them to take a depleted and very low on confidence Southampton team. Obviously, they've got some decent strengths. They'll trouble Wolves with their 4-4-2. But at home, I would fancy Wolves to progress.
Yeah, I mean, Southampton, 5 Premier League defeats in a row. They've conceded 18 goals in those 5 games. They conceded 12 in the last 2 games, 9 at Manchester United, though they were down to 10 men after the second minute when Alex Yankovic was sent off. And they conceded 3 in the first half at Newcastle, which Newcastle haven't scored 3 in the first half in the Premier League since about 2015, I think. And Bednarek, of course, was sent off when they were 6-0 down at Manchester United, wrongly sent off. So it all went wrong for them that day. They didn't manage to pick it up at Newcastle, but they do have a very good manager. And it's not often that a manager concedes 9 goals twice in the space of 18 months or so and is still highly thought of. He is. Now, Takumi Minamino scored a wonderful, really good quality goal at Newcastle, but he'll be cup-tied because he has played for Liverpool this season. But he, you would think, would play on Sunday in the league. They're talking about awful defending, stop conceding goals. The manager's saying that's the key of winning, missing goals from our strikers. Ings, unlucky, he says. Defence has to be stabilised. We need to find the reset button, says Ralf Hasenhüttl. And we have no time to train. We're just playing games. But they do have defender Yannick Vestergaard back. He came back for the Newcastle game after 7 weeks out. Oriol Romeu was out for a month until the end of January. He's back, but they're not getting goals at the moment. Danny Ings, 1 goal in his last 10, or 1 in the last 11, if you don't include his penalty. Nathan Redmond, 1 goal in his last 22. Shea Adams, formerly of Birmingham fame, no goals in his last 11. And James Ward-Prowse has scored 4 Premier League free kicks already this season. So, I mean, they know where the dangers are. They know what those players can do. And they really need to be careful about not conceding sloppy free kicks or having them bought against them on the edge of the box. Remember that one at home to Newcastle, which cost them dear when Cody was, I think, unfairly adjudged to have fouled Callum Wilson. It's those kind of things they need to be really careful of in this game, hey?
That's definitely a factor. Don't give them any free kicks in the kind of 20 to 30 yard range. Absolutely not. I mean, you know, we can talk about Southampton's atrocious defensive record for 2 hours, but if you want a clean sheet, you come to Molineux, because Wolves don't score many goals. So not anticipating a classic, and as if you look at the Premier League form table of the last six games, Southampton are bottom and Wolves are 17th. Southampton have scored 4 in 6 and Wolves have scored 5 in 6. So the potential for lots of goals is not great. However, when Southampton came to Molineux in October, Wolves tried out their fancy new 4-2-3-1 formation, which you may have heard us speaking about for the first time that day. And Wolves really got at them. And I remember the two wing-backs playing really well. Semedo had a good game that day. I think Aitnori was on the other flank as well and did well. And that's what I want to see that again. I want to see that positive intent from the opening minutes. You know, they eased their way into the game against Leicester, which was respect to the opposition, and rightly so. Against Southampton, they're so low on confidence. If you score a goal early, then Wolves can have a bit of fun. Imagine that. Score a few goals, maybe a nice little cheeky 2-0, 3-0 win. That'd be great. But they've got to take the initiative. They can't let Southampton get a foot in the game and get their confidence back, because that's the main issue here. Look at awful. It's surrendered against Man United. People were sort of saying, oh, you know, the red cards and, oh, you know, feel sorry for them. And they didn't play that bad. They lost 9-0. That was atrocious. That's going to be in their mind still. Losing to a really poor Newcastle team as well at the weekend against 9 men. So Wolves have got to take advantage of that. The amount of teams that have taken advantage of Wolves' vulnerability in recent weeks, it's now time to turn the tables. They didn't do it against West Brom, but they've got to do it now.
No, you're right. And I think an early goal for Wolves would absolutely help that, and what it could do psychologically. On Sunday, by the way, you know that Conor Coady missed his only Premier League game under Nuno in that return fixture, which was when Wolves tried out the back four. We don't know if it's because Conor was missing, having had to self-isolate previously when on international duty. But it will be Conor's 100th Premier League appearance, and it will be his 99th for Wolves, because he came on as an 88th-minute substitute for Liverpool at Fulham 8 seasons ago. But congratulations in advance to Conor for his 100th Premier League appearance. Any tweets, Tim?
Paul Mansell, our athletic quiz champione, has asked, what's the latest with Saïss and his contract? Would you keep him for next season, and in what capacity? So, yeah, Saïss is out of contract in the summer, but Wolves have got a one-year option. And, of course, they will take that option up. You know, they're not going to let him leave on a free if the option's in their favour. So I'd be stunned if they didn't, because even if they decided they want to move him on, you know, they want to get a fee for him. So they'll give him that option for another year. And then we'll see what happens with him in the summer. But I think as a first-choice defender going forward, you know, Wolves will have to upgrade in that position. I think they need a top-class centre-half to come in the summer. I think that should be their priority. We've discussed this before. But Saïss, I wouldn't be letting him go. I think he's a really good squad player. He's a really good personality, a really nice guy to have around the group as well. He's popular. They all like him a lot. And he can play in a number of positions.
And judging by his dress sense, he clearly has a personality. Which must add something to the squad. Do you remember when he showed up at the end of season awards dressed all in bling, wasn't it?
He
was dressed more like Michael Jackson than he was a footballer. It was extraordinary. But good. Like it. Matt Lake asks, with Neto's standards increasing week upon week, what is the likelihood of a richer club like Man City putting forth an offer? And would you be open to sell him for a high price to reinvest in the squad?
No. We had this debacle with Jota last summer, and the problems they've had. Sort of, and I know he's Jota's replacement effectively, but the reinvestment in the squad, you know, hasn't gone very well for this season, has it? So, no, we're not ready for that. Liam Gallagher can do one. It's absolutely no way. It's only been a few months. Traore has been talked about across the world for his 6-month purple patch. So he's not guaranteed to go to a massive club yet. And Wolves have had offers and inquiries for all their players over the years. Neves, Jimenez, Traore, the lot. And they're all on long contracts for a reason. So I think he's having a phenomenal year. I tweeted a couple of months ago, I think he's an outside chance to be nominated for Young Player of the Year, which would be an unbelievable achievement for a Wolves player. So fingers crossed he can continue this form and getting that shortlist. I mean, there's some massive competition for that, but that would be fantastic. He's doing brilliantly.
He's only 20 and he's playing every single week. It's absolutely the place for him to develop. The problem is, from a Wolves perspective, every single Wolves game is live on TV, which normally they're not, are they, when we don't have lockdown. So that's a problem. So stop looking at him anyway. Any other business? Luke Matheson doing well at Ipswich?
great to see him get a move to a good League One club, Ipswich, having a toughish season, but you know they're pushing for playoffs. So yeah, great to see him get some game time. Deion Sanderson's doing okay as well at Sunderland. I think he's in and out of the teams. He's got competition for places, but he's been playing at centre half at Sunderland, and I've seen some rave reviews about his performances as well. So yeah, good to see some of these guys getting minutes. Rafa Mir just continues to score goals as well, having a great impact in La Liga, which is an interesting one. So yeah, all good.
Now, Elise Evans of the newly formed BBC Wolverhampton, she's great to see they have that on. She tweeted the other day, "I'm from Wolverhampton, but I've never ... And I replied that I've never been to the racecourse or to Speedway or to the dogs, which I'm slightly ashamed about. And I was humiliated by my fellow Wolfrunians on Twitter for particularly never having been to the Speedway. Have you been? Is it a really good night out?
Speedway. I used to go every single Monday. Went home and away with my dad. What, one season? Yeah, we were really into it. That's brilliant.
So what am I missing, and why should we all go when we can?
I remember going to Speedway, first time I ever went, and my dad was like, "I'll go and get us some drinks." So I went to the bar, and I saw this bottle of orange juice behind the bar. I was like, "Oh, can I have a bottle of hooch, please?" Bearing in mind I was about 10 years old. They were like, "Have you got any ID?" No. Anyway, no, the Speedway's great. I've never done the dogs. So I'm with you there. I've done the horse racing. The horse racing is good, but yeah, we should definitely do the dogs one day, I think. Good
definitely night. I need to spend a week or two of my summer holiday in Wolverhampton. That's what needs to happen. I need to go and see all the sights.
Said no one ever.
That's how much I'm missing it. I really am. Enjoyed your video on Wandering Wolf with Mark and Craig. I did not know that Dave Harrison, the legendary journalist, was your neighbour. Is that right?
Not neighbour, but I was friends with his son in school. So yeah, he was a journalist at the News of the World, Dave Harrison. So you've got him to blame for me getting into the industry, basically. But yeah, no, really nice chat with Mark Rhodes of Pop Stars or Pop Idol fame. I can't remember which one it was now, but everyone will remember how massively famous he was, and he still presents Crackerjack with Sam, his friend, on BBC Kids TV. They're a lovely guy. They've set up a new venture, as you say, Wandering Wolf. Having a chat about the Wolves, because no one else does that at the moment, do they?
No, who would do that? I spoke to Theo Delaney's Life Goals podcast, which was out on Monday, about my misspent youth following Wolves around the country. And they made me choose my most painful goal scored against Wolves as well, which I'm not going to tell you about. You have to have a listen if you want to know which one it was. You can probably guess. I've talked about it on here before. Anyway, don't forget, if you would like to gorge yourselves on Tim's fine Wolves content, then you must be a subscriber. So go to theathletic.co.uk/wolvespod. It's just £3.99 a month for the first 6 months. So that's less than £1 a week. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Bab. See you next week.
And thank you to Matt Wild as well for joining us. We'll be back same time next week, Tuesday morning, in your regular podcast inbox, by which time Wolves could be in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup and 3 points closer to Europe and or further away from relegation, depending on the tint of your glasses. Bye for now.
The Athletic.